This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. And exciting news, as of this morning, we're also now officially on Pinterest and Instagram, so you can follow us on there. All kinds of new developments coming in all the time here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. And today, yet again, I have another badass woman in the studio with me here today, Roxanne Sataki. Mm-hmm. And you are from the Women's Center. You're the Director of Community Engagement.
Yep.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So first, tell me a little bit about what the Women's Center is.
Sure. So I work with the Women's Centers generally, and we are a group of independent abortion providers. I work most closely with our Cherry Hill Women's Center, which is in Camden County in New Jersey. But we also have four affiliated centers, two in Pennsylvania. One is the Philadelphia Women's Center, and the other is the Delaware County Women's Center. Then we have two centers in Atlanta, Georgia, or one center in Atlanta, Georgia, and one in Hartford, in Connecticut.
Okay, so you're kind of scattered all over throughout the region.
Yeah, all along the East Coast.
Are you trying to incorporate more independent abortion centers into that network?
So we actually are members of two different networks of abortion providers. One's the National Abortion Federation, which is a really great organization that does a lot of high-level security, a lot of abortion funding, and also accreditation and trainings for abortion providers nationally and internationally, I believe. And then we work with the Abortion Care Network, which is actually a network of all independent abortion providers through the United States. So independent abortion providers, although they're a little bit less known, actually provide care for about 3 out of every 5 patients that access abortion services in this country.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people really know what the difference is between like going to a Planned Parenthood, going to an independent abortion provider, going to their OBGYN. So can you explain a little bit about how they're all different?
So mostly it's just kind of different structures of how the care is laid out, and both are very, really vital, right? So Planned Parenthood affiliates operate within communities based on what the needs are. So some offer primarily GYN services, some offer comprehensive GYN services and abortion care services. Independent abortion providers offer a range of services as well, but generally specialize in abortion care. Because they have their main focus on abortion care services, they are generally the experts in providing care throughout pregnancy. So most of the abortions that happen in second and in third trimester abortion providers are provided by independent abortion providers.
Right, because that just requires a higher level of skill and knowledge.
Absolutely. There also is a lot of additional regulations that happen, a lot of increased attention from anti-abortion extremists, and so there are a lot of specialized concerns that come with those centers.
And that actually is a myth I'd like to clear up, that most people that are getting an abortion that late into their pregnancy, usually it's for some sort of reason of non-compatibility with life, diagnosis. People aren't just waiting till, 7 months and like, I'm going to have an abortion now. That's really not, I know that's kind of what the right likes to portray it as, but really that's usually, there's some major mitigating circumstance when you're getting a third trimester abortion.
Yeah, so I would say that, the majority of abortions that happen in the United States do occur in the first trimester of pregnancy, and there are generally compelling circumstances that lead people to have abortions in second or third trimester pregnancy. I do think that we have a tendency to rely on narratives of patients who have fetal abnormalities or medical complications because even among, people who consider themselves pro-choice or abortion supporters, those are the most easily digestible, I think, circumstances. But something that I think isn't talked about a lot either are the people who are actually pushed further from being able to access care in states where those same right-wing folks who don't you know, want to acknowledge that anybody should have access to abortion care services are making it really hard for people to be able to get the care that they need. So in addition to people who discover that they need to access abortion later in pregnancy, some people who know that they or make the decision to terminate a pregnancy in, say, the first trimester, are actually pushed further into pregnancy because of some of these barriers. And that could be...
And I assume there's also financial issues.
Right. So there could be financial barriers, something called chasing the fee, in states where, especially patients who rely on Medicaid, aren't able to utilize that. People save the small amounts of money that they have coming in until they have saved enough to access, say, a first trimester abortion, which in, you know, this country usually ranges from about $350 to maybe $550, which is a large amount of money, you know,
for someone that's struggling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is once they've raised that amount of money, they're actually further in the pregnancy and the cost has increased. And it's a vicious cycle. Exactly. There's also, you know, the cost of childcare, of missing work. We know that most people don't have paid time off to be able to take off, or fair scheduling to where they know that they can schedule a doctor's appointment in advance. A lot of states at this point are pushing for restrictions that actually have waiting periods, where the state is writing mandatory scripts that need to be provided for patients that include oftentimes very misleading or actual misinformation, and then are made to wait 24, sometimes up to 72 hours until they can actually have their appointment. So adding additional unnecessary visits can really push people further into.
I'm assuming those visits also have a cost, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, every time you have to go, I'm assuming there's another fee incurred for that too. Yeah, that seems very tacky.
Yes.
Let's actually, you had a few statistics you wanted to give about independent abortion providers before. We'll go into the attacks after that. But
sure. Yeah. So as I mentioned, about 3 in 5 patients who have an abortion in the United States do access that care at an independent provider, which means 60% of abortions or so are performed by independent abortion clinics. Just to put that in perspective, it's about 35% that are performed in Planned Parenthood centers, only about 4 in hospital settings, and then only about 1% in private physicians' offices.
Really?
Yeah. So most people actually aren't able to just go and see their normal GYN for this type of specialized care.
And why is that?
For a lot of reasons. Many GYN providers don't want to incorporate abortion care services into their practice, whether it's because of their own feelings about abortion care or because of the high cost of security for the type of center, you know, the type of attacks that you can incur when you start providing abortion care services, the high regulation and the low reimbursement rates.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's something we'll also touch on later. So let's jump right into women's rights are constantly under attack in this country. And what are some of the ones that you're seeing personally at that center or that are affecting people in New Jersey, affecting people throughout the country?
Yeah. So reproductive health care generally is definitely on the national level facing a lot of attacks right now. One thing that we've been mobilizing really heavily against is the anticipated Supreme Court nominee.
Yes.
Right now, we've been mobilizing against Kavanaugh with the hashtag Stop Kavanaugh campaign. We're working alongside allies, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, you know, across our centers to get people out and, you know, getting them to contact their senators to let them know that they should oppose this nomination or any nomination that would work to overturn Roe. So Roe is the protection that we have on the federal level to protect access to abortion. And with the shifting composition of the Supreme Court, you know, we've seen Kennedy was a swing vote, but he did generally stand behind abortion rights. So if we have one and then a second new nominee, that would potentially
shift the balance,
and shift that
balance. Because Scalia was against the right to choose.
Right, so we kind of knew, you know,
right,
that wasn't going to make the big difference. But if Kennedy and Scalia are both replaced by anti-abortion judges, then we can anticipate seeing a challenge to that. And the cases that would lead up to that Supreme Court case are already in the works.
Okay.
So there's already, you know,
the chest state places.
Cases that are being challenged, that, you know, we have states that are introducing 6-week bans. They call them heartbeat bans. So it, generally sooner than most people even find out that they're pregnant,
right.
They would ban access to abortion. And so these are things that are fundamentally challenge Roe. And, you know, when we have states like Indiana that are pushing them forward and we see those challenges coming up, we anticipate those kind of things bubbling up to the Supreme Court.
So how would we, what would that look like for New Jersey if both of these people, hopefully they will not get appointed, hopefully, you know, we can rally against them, but let's say both people, and Trump said he's going to appoint anti-choice justices, if they get appointed, how does that affect us in New Jersey?
Luckily in New Jersey, we have pretty strong protections, and that right to access abortion is very well insulated. So even if the right to access abortion were overturned on the federal level, New Jersey would still protect the right of residents to access abortion care services. We do have legal protections for people that would already kind of challenge any threats to access in the state. And we also have protections for folks to be able to access abortion care financially. We're one of only 17 states in the United States that opts in to use state funds to help people access medically necessary abortions through the Medicaid state program.
All right. And you wanted to touch a little bit on funding, and it was a good segue. And funding's really one of the big challenges for keeping centers like yours open, keeping the ability to provide abortions to those who need them. So can you talk a little bit about some funding?
Sure. So when we talk about the current threats to Roe versus Wade, what we don't hear as often are the people that already aren't able to access abortion care in this country with things the way they are. So as I mentioned before, the Hyde Amendment, did I mention that before?
Yeah, no, you haven't.
I don't think I talked about it.
You talked to me before the show about it, but let's explain to the listeners what that is.
Perfect. So on the federal level, there's something called the Hyde Amendment, which is a policy that restricts any federal funds from being used for abortion care services. So what that looks like in reality is people who rely on the Medicaid system to be able to afford their health care aren't able to access an abortion when they need it. New Jersey, luckily, is one of the very few states that opts in to use state funds to allow that population to be able to make healthcare decisions based on what they feel is best for themselves and what they decide with their doctors, and not just based on how much money they have in their pockets.
Right.
But there still are a lot of people that aren't included under that program. For example, our undocumented neighbors aren't able to access Medicaid programs at all. And so there are groups in the state there's a group in the state, which is the New Jersey Abortion Access Fund. I work as a board member with that fund, and what we do is fundraise to help give grants to patients who are having trouble coming up with the amount of money needed to access an abortion. Even people who have private insurance sometimes struggle to raise the funds needed because some policies will restrict abortion as a covered service, especially for dependents, which now with the Affordable Care Act, we have people being able to be covered as dependents up to age 26 on their parents' policies,
right.
But also dependent spouses. And
the high deductible insurance. I have a $4,000 deductible, so.
Exactly. So historically, abortion providers have worked really hard to keep the out-of-pocket costs for their care pretty low. Like we said, $350 to $500 or so is still a high cost for healthcare, but when we look at what healthcare costs are, just generally, it's still pretty low. So what winds up happening is the out-of-pocket cost is actually a lot lower than people's deductibles. So they wind up still being faced with that out-of-pocket cost.
All right. And you also wanted to talk about, I believe, there's some kind of challenge coming up of money raising and awareness challenge that sounds like quite a bit of fun.
Yeah. So in addition to the fundraising that we do for the independent abortion provider, the Cherry Hill Women's Center, we also do fundraising throughout the year for New Jersey Abortion Access Fund. And from August 15th to September 16th, we're going to be in the middle of what we call the Taco or Beer Challenge. This is actually something that the National Network of Abortion Funds hosts across the United States. And so different abortion funds challenge their supporters to, one, eat a taco or drink a beer. And can you or do both? You can do both. I highly suggest it. Donate to your local abortion fund, which in New Jersey would be NJAF, or New Jersey Abortion Fund. And then post about your donation and your taco eating, and tag three friends to help get the word out there.
That seems like definitely a fun challenge. Yeah. And, I think my partner Brian and I, Brian, I think I'm signing us up for this. We're going to have to have tacos and beers on one of the live streams.
Yeah, it's in its fifth year, and it is a fun one.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of that one before. That's very cool. Some other things that you wanted to talk about, I believe, was the gag rule, the domestic gag rule, and the international gag rule.
Yeah, so this is another challenge that we're seeing to reproductive health care in general on the national level. The domestic gag rule is something that would limit providers of reproductive health care who get Title X family planning money from being able to give comprehensive information, including information and referrals to abortion providers. So this is a policy that actually mimics what we see happen every time a Republican comes into power in the presidency on a global scale. So this has been referred to as the global gag rule. And it's a gagging because it's actually gagging doctors from being able to give evidence-based, medically accurate, comprehensive information from patients. Internationally, this looks like health centers that the United States operates in other countries not being able to provide resources, information, or referrals to abortion care services, even in countries where, say, rape has been weaponized against patients and people.
Right, which is one of the things that happens in war, quite, you know, it's one of the tools of war that... Right. The most devastating tools of war.
Right. So we are supposedly out there helping to give care to people, but not giving them the resources that they need should they need to terminate a pregnancy.
And since we're allowed to curse on this show, I would like to say that that's fucking disgusting.
It is. Awful. Yeah. So that's something that we see kind of go back and forth. When we have a Democrat come into power, they pull the gag rule, you know. Doctors are allowed to go back to giving people what they need. And a Republican comes back into power. And it's just a tug of bargaining chips. Yeah. Yeah, political kind of game pieces that really has huge impacts on people's lives.
And I wanted to... It's running a little low on time, so I just wanted to get back to one of the things. Like, talking about your specific clinic, you have some issues with protesters coming, and how can people help with that?
Yeah, so most days we do have anti-choice protesters that stand outside of the clinic. They shout at patients, they carry signs that have graphic images on them, they have a tendency to videotape people as they enter the facility, and so these are all things that make people feel really uncomfortable.
Are they trying to dox them, like post their information? Is that the...
Overall, it's just used as a tactic to make people feel intimidated mm-hmm. and try to make people turn away from accessing right. care. What it just usually tends to do is make people's day a lot more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pretty shitty thing to do to target people when they're already having a tough time. So what we do is we enlist the use of community members or the help of community members to serve as clinic escorts. And what our clinic escorts do is serve to walk patients into the clinic when we have protesters present, especially on days when we have really high numbers of protesters. Sometimes they can number in the 30s, 40s, 50s or more.
It's not that big really of a facility I've been there, so that must take up a lot of real estate outside. Does. That does seem very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so in addition to just serving as like a soft barrier to help get people into the clinic and kind of de-escalating the atmosphere outside, they also work to serve as something that fights back against the persistent stigma that exists against abortion care services and abortion providers in general. When people that are driving driving down Kings Highway, where our center is located, see folks that are wearing pro-choice vests that are there assisting patients on, you know, their own time. It really sends a message to the community that this is a service that is well respected and that is necessary and that people deserve to access with dignity and safely.
And you provide some training for people that want to volunteer. You're not just throwing them out to the wolves. They are trained how to be a friendly face for the women that are arriving.
Right. So we do offer a training. Anybody that's interested actually can fill out a volunteer application right on our website, which is thewomenscenters.com.
And we'll put all that in the show notes, the links to everything that you've mentioned.
Great. But we do have a training coming up, which is going to be held on September the 27th. In the evening.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you fill out an application, I would follow up with all the details about that.
Okay. And before we leave, I did want to talk a little bit more about that breaking the stigma that this is a normal medical procedure that lots of women choose for their own reasons that really isn't anyone else's business why they're choosing these reasons. So what can we really do to help break that stigma?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do at the Women's Centers is try to create opportunities for people to raise up their voices and share their stories. There's a lot of really great national campaigns that are trying to just, you know, encourage people to talk about their experiences. And that stigma really does kind of make people feel nervous about doing that. Mm-hmm. So just making the people around you know that you're a safe person to talk to. You might be the first person that somebody talks to about their experience and helps to give them that encouragement and, you know, courage that they need to continue to share. They're also, you know, just getting to know your local abortion provider, making yourself well-educated on the issue so that you can respond when people talk with misinformation. Mm-hmm. We do have, unfortunately, a proliferation in the state of fake women's health centers that serve to operate to look like actual abortion providers, but really are an arm of the anti-abortion extremist movement that work to send out misinformation, lure people in to try to pressure them into continuing pregnancies, regardless of what they feel like is best for them. So really just educating yourself on what the landscape of abortion access looks like and, you know, communicating that to the people within your circle.
And hug your local abortion provider.
Yes.
Yeah, thank your local abortion provider because it's a thankless job most of the time.
It can be. It definitely can be. But I would say that the people that do this work are really passionate. And when we do find that there are increases in, you know, say violence or targeting of abortion providers with the increased rhetoric from the president, for example, abortion providers tend to dig in their heels.
You know? I love stubborn people. Yeah. Stubborn people are the best people in the world.
Yeah, so this is a fight that we've been, you know, raging for a long time, and we don't have any plans on stopping anytime soon.
That's great. That's great to hear. Did you have anything, any final words you wanted to close out with before we shut it down for the day?
No, I just think that in conversations surrounding abortion care, we have a tendency to forget the people who are most impacted. So, you know, I urge folks to look into the work in this country of the reproductive justice movement, which is led by women of color organizations nationally like Sister Song and more locally in Philadelphia like the New Voices Project are doing really incredible work at the intersections of racial justice, environmental justice, and reproductive health and rights. And so I think that we need to continue to look to the leadership of the communities most impacted.
Right. Yeah. You often, you know, we think about a woman's white right to choose, but it's still a sort of a little bit of bourgeoisie feminism that we're, and we really need all this to be intersectional, 100%.
Absolutely. I think even we often, you know, forget that gender nonconforming folks, trans men, can and do access abortion care services. So we tend to be a little bit,
we can be very judgmental and...
Yeah, we're not always most accommodating
historically to all people. Historically, have been very bad. Like, part of your health services is your ability to have children if you want as well.
Of course.
And, you know, anyone that listened to my previous episode about the American plan, they were sterilizing women that were generally poor, women of color, mm-hmm. on suspicion that they had a sexually transmitted infection.
Yeah.
So there's a lot tied up into all of that.
Testing of birth control, yeah, reproductive coercion, the reproductive health and rights, you know, movements in general definitely can learn a lot from looking at their history and then, you know, reevaluating how we move forward.
It's been great talking to you today. It's been, I've loved having you here. Thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate
it. Get me all that information for the show notes, and we'll make, you know, ask people to reach out and do what they can. And hopefully I'll be having a taco and a beer in the near future.
Great.
To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us again today. If you like this kind of reporting, you're hearing long form interviews with people that often have their voices silenced by the mainstream media. Maybe if you're lucky, they'll get a sentence or two out. But we really like to dive into topics and bring you the amazing activists surrounding you to encourage you to become an activist too. And these just, you won't hear this on corporate backed media. So that's why we need your help. We won't take any corporate money. We're based entirely off of donations we get from our local comrades. So help us out. Costs us about $25 a week to keep going. You know, give us $25, sponsors for a week, we'll thank you, and all kinds of good things. We'll love you. Brian will write you on the whiteboard behind him, and maybe I'll even sing a little song for you. Who knows what? But we just really appreciate you. Remember to like us, share our stuff, follow us on anywhere you can find podcasts. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.